Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Change can be hard. Getting other people to change can be maddening. So how do financial therapists encourage clients to move forward toward financial health, debt management, and wealth management? How can you help yourself or someone you love move toward a healthier relationship with money? Rick Kaler is a pioneer in the field of financial therapy. He's a wealth advisor and owner of Kaler Financial Group in Rapid City. He joins In the Moment frequently as a guest, and you can find all those conversations online at listen.sdpb.org. Today, he's with us for a look at understanding the stages of change, exquisite listening, and much more. Rick, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Good morning, Lori.
So the last time we talked...
Chuckling at the difficulty of helping someone else change.
We all feel that, don't we?
If it were just easy.
If only it were, right? But this is something that is really important to you. And I think people, you know, who maybe are new to the concept of financial therapy, it's a very specific field that you've really been a pioneer in. And the last time you were on the program, we talked about the Dirty Dozen and these ways to sort of, you know, resist change and recognize resistance to change. Now we're going to talk about, you know, the good stuff, understanding what change looks like. Where do you want to begin?
Yeah, well, we could just start with talking about some research that has been done. There's a book called Changing for Good. Another one, Systems of Psychotherapy, a Trans-Theoretical Analysis of Change. Both Petraska is an author of both of those. And it's kind of helpful to understand the changes that we go through when we're considering making a change. And so it applies to us, and it applies to someone else. But he identified six kind of progressions that we go through in changing. So we could just kind of chat about each one of those.
Right, because when we're talking about financial change, it can be this big thing with just, you know, your relationship with money and your emotions, and it can also be those little behaviors as well, right? So, you know, what you're doing for your retirement, but it's tied into this much deeper thing about, you know, fear of, you know, never having enough, for example.
Yeah, exactly. It so applies to anything we do with money. Yeah. It was Daniel Kahneman that discovered, in fact, he won a Nobel Prize for his research in economics, even though he was a psychologist, who found that 90% of all financial decisions are made emotionally.
Wow.
And so just understanding the progression that we go through in changing, and it's applied to about every decision we make. Retirement, we may be in a different stage of change, considering that, than maybe estate planning. But it has to do with any money belief. And the first stage is basically, I don't know what I don't know. Mm. Sometimes we call it denial. They call it pre-contemplation.
That sounds nicer, doesn't it? Pre-contemplation.
I haven't even started thinking about that. Is that right? Even something I need to think about? No, I don't think so. So, you know, that's if we put it in the seasonal context of, say, Scrooge. You know, Scrooge didn't know that he didn't know. He had no clue how he was showing up and no reason to even question what he believed about money or how he was showing up.
Sure.
And so this is typically where a lot of us live and are living in many areas of our life, but especially financially.
So using the metaphor of Scrooge, because this is one of your books, The Financial Wisdom of Ebenezer Scrooge, and this is looking at this familiar Christmas story for financial guidance. When he doesn't know what he doesn't know, are there signs that, or does this everything just sort of launch with an intervention from Marley's ghost in that sense? Like, can we kind of tell that he gets that he's not happy, or what does pre-contemplation look like?
Yeah, I don't think he gets that he's not happy.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets anything. When we're in pre-contemplation, it's this is how the world is, and there's just no awareness.
Sure.
There's no awareness there's a problem. There's no awareness that anything could be different.
So if you're aware that you have a problem, you're ahead of a lot of, you know, it's not like a comparison, like you're ahead of other people, but, you know, there's beauty in the fact that if you're aware you have a problem. It can feel gross to be aware that you have a problem, but it's better than not knowing that you have a problem, right?
Yeah, I've heard it said that being aware is 50% of solving the problem.
Right.
And so being aware moves you right into contemplation because now you can start thinking about the problem. Or you may have even, if you've accepted you have a problem, you're even further down the line. But in pre-contemplation, you just don't know that you don't know. And you hit on a really important part of pre-contemplation, which is the thing that usually brings us out of not knowing that we don't know, out of pre-contemplation, is some type of an intervention.
Right.
And, you know, for example, people usually don't wake up one morning and go, you know, this is a great day. I think I'll get into financial planning, or I think I'll get a financial therapist, or I think I'll get into therapy.
Yeah.
Or even I've read on yoga that a surprisingly large percentage of the people that start yoga do so because of some injury or some intervention that put them into doing yoga.
Interesting. All right. So what does contemplation look like as a stage? What, use Scrooge in that moment. Like, what does contemplation look like?
Yeah, it happens when Marley comes to visit him and says, dude, you're going to end up just like I did if you don't pay attention.
Yeah.
And it usually takes a fairly dramatic intervention to get our attention. It certainly takes us being ready to hear, and I think the easiest thing I can help everyone relate to this too, is if you've ever been in a serious relationship, married or have a partner, and you come home someday and you say, you know what, so-and-so at work told me I need to be doing this or that, and I think I'm going to start doing that. And you're met with not a really happy expression on the part of your partner.
Yeah.
And you say, well,
like, what?
Yeah. What's wrong? Aren't you happy?
Yeah.
It's like, how many times have I said the same thing? And it can truly be like you've never heard that before.
Right.
And in fact, if you read Scrooge in the book, Marley says, why is it this Christmas Eve that you've seen me?
Right.
I have come to visit you many Christmas Eves before.
Huh. I didn't remember that part of the story. I just got a little chill there.
Yeah.
So it could have happened before, but Scrooge wasn't ready.
I think this is the reason that we use Scrooge, and I love Scrooge so much, as a model of transformation and a model of awakening.
Yeah.
Because when you read the book, it is so rich. And that's one of the nuances in the book. Like, interesting that this is the Christmas Eve that you're seeing me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't his first visit. But it was the visit that got Scrooge's attention.
So if you are that partner and, you know, your spouse, for example, comes home from work and says, I think it's time to take this, you know, financial planning a little more seriously, the right response is maybe not an eye roll.
Tell me more about that.
Tell me more about that, yeah.
Which we can eventually get into methodology. But, so when you move into contemplation, you begin seriously considering resolving the problem. You're not ready to do anything.
Hmm.
You're not completely convinced you need to do anything. But you're open to maybe considering that maybe we do need to take a look at our savings plan, or maybe we do need to take a look at doing a will, or maybe we do need to take a look at making our investments less risky or more diversified, or whatever it is.
Right. Do people get stuck in that contemplation?
Sure.
Contemplation turns into procrastination.
Yeah, you can. Changing takes a combination of three things. A person needs to be confident. They need to be ready, and they need to deem the change important. Mm. So when someone has a financial goal, let's just any goal that you have, you know, think of that goal. And maybe it's saving more for retirement. Well, you're contemplating it, so you know you're aware of that. And then rate yourself on a 1 to 10. How important is it that I save for retirement? You know, maybe you put yourself at I think most people might put themselves in an 8 or a 9 or a 10. How ready am I to save? maybe a 7?
Right.
How confident are you that you can do this?
Yeah.
Maybe a 4?
I think that confidence is a kicker.
And then you ask yourself, anything that you rate below an 8 probably means you're not ready.
Okay.
That something needs to happen in each of those categories. For example, if it wasn't high in importance, you'd have to say, well, what would move me to a 10? Readiness, you know, if you rated yourself a 7, what would move me to a 10? What's stopping me? Why didn't I rate that higher? And then on confidence, the same thing. So when you get 8s or above in each category, typically it's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
So all of these goals that we have, and when I work with somebody, you know, we'll have all sorts of financial goals, and we'll test those. And if we can't get them to 8s or above in each of those three, it's probably just not even worth going after them right now. Because we set ourselves up for failure.
So let's talk about the next step, which is preparation.
I'm glad you keep me on track, Lori. So once we say, I'm all 8s and above. I'm ready to go. I want to make this happen. We start to prepare. We start to take some small steps that are ready for the action. So it could be a number of things, visiting with my employer about what I have to do to change my retirement allocation, or set up a 401k, or setting an appointment with an estate planning attorney, or just putting all of the little steps. Because we can kind of get hung up in preparation, too, when maybe we need to redo our will, and it can seem like such a huge thing that it's hard to go into action.
Right. Where is Scrooge in preparation in that story?
Scrooge is he's going through therapy, actually, when he's going into the past.
Right.
He is reliving scenes. He trembles at times physically. He cries at times. He has joy at times. And if this is a pretty good definition of what's called experiential therapy, of doing unfinished business. He's visiting all these unfinished pieces of his life, which can be a huge part of contemplation. Even getting into therapy, we're moving in and out of these stages with every decision we make. For example, Scrooge had to prepare to go to the window and go with the first ghost. So within all of this, there's these little mini stages that are happening.
Yeah.
So for him, the big preparation to make a change was as he went with these ghosts and looked into his past, and then he looked into his present, and he looked into his future. And all of this was preparation for when he awoke, and he's ready now to go into action.
Yeah. Ooh, let's get to action. Because action is not the final stage, but we have to talk about action. What does that look like in our lives?
Yeah, that's when I'm doing it. Yeah. That's when, okay, I have I've written my first check to go into the savings plan or the 401k. I'm actually doing it. I have gotten a financial therapist or whatever it is. I'm in the process and I'm doing it now. I've taken action. I'm modifying my behavior. That has occurred. And that's not the end.
Yeah.
Because we've got to anticipate the fifth stage, which is maintenance or relapse. And this is a real normal part, is we new behaviors just don't happen. I mean, if you can think of dieting or working out or a savings program, we just aren't on autopilot.
Right.
And relapse happens.
Yeah. If it was six steps and it was done, then, you know, wouldn't the world be, you know, wouldn't humanity be in a great place? But people carry a lot of shame and fear of that, and that can keep them from starting. So sometimes,
and it's so important to know that I am probably going to suffer some type of relapse. It's very normal. And oftentimes we may have to go through some more contemplation or more preparation to get us through the roadblock that has come up.
Yeah.
So it's really important that a person doesn't lose heart when that happens.
Right. And maybe a great idea is to have a little help, which is maybe a good time to engage a financial therapist and walk through some of these things together. And you mentioned, before I let you go, you know, when you look at Ebenezer Scrooge and the Christmas story, it's painful. This is a painful journey for him. But you don't have to go through your own journey alone. Rick Kaler,
thank you. The cool thing is we don't know if Ebenezer relapsed or not, but he certainly came out in a far better place than he was at the beginning of the story.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this, and we look forward to our next conversation as well.
Okay, take care and have a wonderful holiday season.